All right. Well, the lesson tonight, as we went through that, the questions tonight were more personal questions than they are discussion questions, but we'll work around that. I'm not going to embarrass you guys, so you don't need to worry about that. I hope you did it in a personal way so you can benefit from it. But as we look at this here tonight, building your ability to communicate, you know, what can help us build our ability to communicate? And some good ideas here that I think can be of help to us, and as the things that are important. And the first one that he says here is, we're on page 13. All right, if you're lost, page 13. Okay, all right, so it's number four. We need to establish intimacy with God and find His help for change. And, you know, I'm so glad that the author that did this section put it in those words and put it in that way, because really that is a huge thing. Without intimacy with God and without His help, we're going to struggle to communicate like we should with our spouse. And I said even at the start, and I know some of you are no longer married, but this communication is for everybody, but it's really, a lot of us hinged around marriage. And he says that God is at work in filling us. You know, we need God's help. We need His filling. And we can't help but have something to talk about if we're walking with the Lord. And the idea here is to discuss the things of the Lord. You know, and my heart goes out to couples that are married, a person who's married to an unsafe spouse. I mean, it must be tremendously difficult to try to... How do you communicate with somebody that's not on your same wavelength? And, you know, that just brings out a burden in my heart. And I want to try to pass that burden on to you folks, because you guys are the core of the people that would pray. We need to be praying for those in our church that have unsafe spouses. And it's tough on them. And I know that each one that I know of, and there's several in our congregation with unsafe spouses, and it's hard. It's hard for them to press on, and some of them are obstinate against the gospel. Others are just, you know, careless about it. But it's a difficult thing. We need to be praying earnestly for them and praising the Lord. If you got a spouse that loves the Lord, and that's something we need to rejoice in. He quotes.
Not only your spouse, your children
too. Yes, that's a burden too. Yeah, your children too.
In my case, it's my children.
Yeah. And your husband's gone, but your children are there to, you know, they don't want to communicate with you about the Lord.
They don't want to talk
about it. No, and that makes it hard. All right? And Acts chapter 4 and verse 20, the apostles said, "We cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard." And that really ought to be that's what he's really trying to get across in this point here, is that everything that comes out of our communication ought to be rooted in our relationship with the Lord, in our fellowship with the Lord, and being able to gain from what the Lord teaches us and sharing that with others so that others can benefit from that as well. And, you know, he mentions there from Psalm 66:16, he says, "Come and hear, all ye that fear the Lord, and I will declare what He hath done for my soul." And there's David's desire to share that with others. And it probably wasn't just his spouse here. He's probably talking to other people, but the same is true, that we ought to be able to share the things that we gain. And you know, even in a really good marriage relationship, sometimes it can feel a bit awkward or a bit clumsy to actually share with your spouse some of the things you've learned in the Bible. And we need to try to conquer that. Because, you know, it can feel a little bit awkward that way sometimes. But if we share the things we've learned, not in a preachy way, but in a just, "Look what I found today. This is really exciting. I found this in the Scriptures." And share that with each other. And that can be a help to each other. It can be an encouragement to you. And it's what the Lord wants us to do. He wants us to build up one another. And that's one of the ways that we can edify our spouse, by sharing what we've learned. And if you're not regularly learning something from the Scriptures, then obviously you need to start digging deeper and to pour your heart into that. And then he gives a whole good paragraph here for those who don't know the Lord, near the bottom of 14 here, a whole paragraph urging them to trust Christ, because without Christ, they don't communicate on the same level. Okay? And then he says the last paragraph on 14 there, if you're a Christian, you can also be greatly hindered in your ability to effectively communicate simply by having sporadic devotions or no devotions. All right, so he just said, if you don't study the Bible on your own, it's going to hinder your communication. So that's just a challenge to each of us. I don't know your personal life, but you know, if you don't spend quality time with the Lord every day, that's something that really needs to be if you're going to be able to have a good communion with your spouse and with your family, to be able to be what you ought to be. And even in a situation like Inika's just indicated here, just by having a good time with the Lord, you may not be able to share some of that with your family that doesn't want to hear, but they can see it in your life, and they can't stop you from doing that. And that's one of the things that we need to let it shine in our life. And people can't, you know, they may not like the way we shine, but they can't put a stop on that. I mean, they may try to discourage it, but they can't stop us from being what God wants us to be. So let your light shine and be a good testimony. And so stay close to the Lord, and that'll be a great help to you. All right, any thoughts or comments on that one there before we venture into the next one? I thought that was really an important one to start with. All right, number two, he talks about acknowledging your faults. That's something none of us like to do. But it's so important. You know, if we're going to communicate, you know, it's so hard to communicate with someone that continually denies that there's an issue that they need to deal with. How do you try to help them? How do you try to talk to them? Every time you share something, it doesn't apply to me. And you think, oh, it does apply to you. Why won't you admit it? And, you know, that's really an issue. And if that happens to be a situation you find yourself in, then what are we supposed to do about it? Well, I guess the most important thing we can do is pray. Pray that the Lord will help the other person see that there is an issue here that they're just trying to avoid. But, you know, in ourselves, if we look at ourselves and deal with our own selves and deal with our own issues, he mentions here, stop and look back over your attitudes, words, and actions. And that's so true. You know, we need to ask ourselves, well, what kind of attitudes do I have? What are my actions? What have my actions been like? How have I responded? What are my words? You know, have I said the right words? Have I been kind? Have I been gentle with my words? Ask those kind of things. And we need to be first to acknowledge our faults. It's far better if we see the error in ourselves and we apologize for what we've done or try to fix the error or even say, would you please pray with me? I've got this issue that I'm dealing with and I'm not doing a very good job at. Rather than the other person saying, you know, I need to have a talk with you. Something that you're doing isn't very good here. Me? I'm not doing that. You know, it's far better if we see it ourselves and admit it and ask for help and ask for prayer than it is to have the other person have to say something.
Very well, you're very slow to find out what our faults are.
So yes. Yes, we need to have a good look in God's mirror on a regular basis. Right. And that's, again, why the first one is so important there, because remember what James said? James said that we need to look into the perfect law of liberty, and he says it's the mirror, and as we look into the scriptures will help to identify issues in our life, and then we can deal with those issues. So, very, very important that we acknowledge to God our faults, and also to our spouse and those others that we're trying to communicate with, if they're involved in the situation, and then ask their forgiveness. It's important that we don't just say, I'm sorry. Sometimes we'll say, you know, I'm sorry I'm always so grumpy, or I'm sorry I'm so, you know, whatever. But we need to ask the forgiveness as well. You know, the two of them are linked, and sometimes people think that they're one and the same, but just acknowledging that we did something isn't really asking the other person to respond. It's just saying something. Whereas when we say, would you please forgive me, then we're asking for a response from them. And that's an important thing that helps to bridge that gap there and resolve that the problems that are there. And so, you know, as he mentions here in the last sentence of the paragraph, he says, they're acknowledging and reconciling your faults with your spouse is half of the battle. And that's so true. If we will not, you know, in situations where a person will not admit that there's an issue, you don't get anywhere with them. Garrett.
Yeah, well, I just earlier on thought, I think a way, at least in my own life, that helps me to look at my own faults isn't necessarily just stopping and looking at my own faults. Like, if I'm about to mention to someone, oh, just think that, like, you always do this and this, what I usually try to do is, like, ask myself, wait a minute, do I do that as well? Like, everything I'm about to say to them, I think, do I do that as well? And if I be honest with myself and say, yeah, I do actually do that as well, then I'm okay. Well, why mention it to them until I've dealt with it? Because why am I mentioning it to them if I'm doing my best job? So sometimes mentioning something to somebody else, it's good for, like, thinking about that yourself. So wait a minute, do I do that? And that, and that, and that. Just brings up things in mind yourself, like looking out a little bit.
Good. So what, anybody remember the illustration Jesus gave that said what he... Yeah, that's it. I remember Jesus said that you take the beam out of your own eye before you try to pick the speck out of somebody else's eye. And that's true. And Gary's absolutely right. You know, when we have to confront somebody else, whether it's our spouse or somebody else, we need to just make sure that we're doing our best to do the right thing. Now, one of the things that goes right hand in hand with that, let's just say that we looked at ourselves and said, yes, I do that. Does that mean that I don't dare say anything to the other person about it? Well, perhaps not. But it does say that we maybe need to preface it something like, you know, here's something that I am struggling with and working on, and I haven't gotten full victory over it yet, but you are struggling with it as well, and I'd like you to just work with, you know, let's pray together about this or something like that. So if we're willing to admit, yes, I'm still struggling, I haven't conquered this, I'm not perfect about this, but here's something that we both need to work on. And that's a way to kind of bridge over that difficulty.
You don't say, well, you're having a problem with it as well. If I confess something that I have done and that I'm having a problem with, without saying anything to the other person about what their problem is, maybe the same as mine, if I'm praying about it and I'm trying very hard to kind of overcome this, that'll probably tell that other person, hang on, now I'm doing the same thing.
Sometimes,
you actually telling them.
Yeah, sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes they're blind too. So, yes, that's right. It all depends on the situation and the circumstances.
Yes.
All right. All right. Any other comments before we move on to number three? Okay, number three here. Spend time together, and that's a really a good one. We need to spend that time together, and take opportunities to communicate. And then he asked a pointed question here. Do you set specific time aside to communicate? And I circled that and thought, no. All right. So to set aside specific time to sit down, all right, Mel, we need to have a talk, just to talk about nothing special, but we just need to talk. And that's an important thing, and I think that there is a need for that. And one other author gave some suggestions that I'm going to share in just a moment here, that along that same line, that I think is really helpful. And but we need to, you know, he reminds us here of when we were first met, we talked as often as we could, you know, as frequently as we could possibly talk together, we would talk, and it was an enjoyable time. Every time we'd get together, it didn't matter what you talked about, it was always just a fun time to talk, even whatever it was. And now that we're married and have been together for, you know, all these years, then we need to make sure that it doesn't get boring to talk to each other. That shouldn't be the case. We ought to love to talk to each other. This suggestion here, and you just ponder this one as I read through it. One counselor gave the assignment to a couple to sit down for 15 minutes, three times a week, with a timer on. And the first time they meet, the wife was to talk for 15 minutes, and he was not to say anything or make any comments, just to listen. And then the next time they got together, a couple days later, he talked for 15 minutes, and she sat there quietly and listened. And they were to do this three times a week for 2 months. And they said that by the time the 2 months were done, they were amazed at how much they learned about each other and how much their communication had drastically improved. And, you know, I think that's important, especially for couples that really don't talk to each other. I mean, I guess I'm too much of a talker. I'd share all kinds of stories and ideas and thoughts, and whatever comes to my mind, I blurt it out, and she probably gets tired of it. But some couples apparently don't. And if you're one of those that just kind of keeps it all in, you don't really talk to each other about yourself and the things that you're thinking and that, we need to get used to that. And so if you struggle in any of those areas there of just opening up and talking to each other about things in general, give that a try. You know, he said specifically, put the timer on for 15 minutes so that you know exactly how long, and then just let her talk until the 15-minute timer goes off, and then you can go do your other things you got to do. But I thought that was unique but very helpful for that couple. Okay, so
this is what my son and his wife do when they sit at the night time.
Yeah, playing on the phone. That's their communication.
And it's just there on their phones.
Yeah. And you know, it's so sad that in a lot of homes, it's either their phones or their communication or their television or their internet or something, and it really does rob a lot of communication. And so we really need to strive to communicate. He mentions here shutting off the television if you got one, and sitting at the table after dinner and just talking over the day, taking a bike ride together, taking a walk together, doing things where you're communicating. And so strive to do that. If this is an area where you have found a weakness, then strive to do that. He used the illustration of Solomon. And let me just share a thought that's come to my mind just recently. Song of Solomon has always been a book that has troubled me because Solomon, you know, I thought, well, why would God have Solomon, of all people, write about marriage when he had so many women? But, he's very experienced.
Well, he had 300 wives, and now he's
but anyway,
he really loves this woman. I can't get over it.
But the thing with it is this, all right? God had that be in the scriptures, and the best thing I think we can do as we look at this book of Song of Solomon is instead of focusing on, as I have so often done, focusing on the fact that he was a polygamist, just think about the fact that here's a woman that God obviously knew he genuinely loved and they had a genuinely good relationship, and just tune out with all the other stuff and focus on what God actually gave us. And that can help us to benefit from that. And when we get to heaven, we can ask God all about the whys in this. But he's given us the book for our education and our benefit. And I believe that, you know, I don't believe that it's an allegorical book that's all about Christ and the church like so many of the old-timers used to say because they were embarrassed about the book. I believe it's a book about a husband and wife that loved each other. And there may be some applications, but that's what it's about. And so we need to take it at that and, you know, and delve into it like that and to benefit from it, because there's a lot of good things in the book that can be of help to us. So he mentions here one.
Mind off the fact that it was Solomon who wrote it.
Yes.
A husband.
Yes.
And
well,
a wife.
That's right, Johnny.
Well, the thing is, at the time that Solomon was king, a lot of, I mean, we don't always speak about this, but a lot of political alliances almost always in that time hinged on into your marriage.
Yes.
So my point there is it was almost unavoidable, even though he wasn't supposed to. If you're going to engage in an international stage at that day, it's not like today you make a treaty. Those days, your treaty or your agreement was to marry the daughter of the king. So that's, I mean, people wonder why did he have so many wives. It wasn't just random. It probably was for political reasons.
Yeah, there was a lot of it that way. But again, like I said, for our benefit, by just tuning out of all of that and focusing on the fact that God planned for Solomon to write about Shulama and just have this love letter for us to benefit from, if we can just focus on that, we'll benefit a lot more from it than we will by just looking at the harem that he had.
I think my point, though, is that Solomon did understand the value of being close to a wife. I think it's just that the politics got in the way of him.
Yeah, that could possibly be. And exactly where Shulamith was in the whole number of them, who knows, whether she was the first one or one other one. You know, and that, again, is not something we need to focus on. We need to just focus on the fact that God had that set out for our benefit. And I think we can... That's been a help to me as I've focused on that, because for a long, long time, I would just get so bogged down by, you know, the fact of his polygamy that I couldn't really get around the fact that God was trying to teach me something that would be beneficial. So that's something that maybe that'll help you as it's been helping me. He mentions here a quote from the Song of Solomon, "Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away, O my dove. Thou art in the cleft of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs. Let me see thy countenance, and let me hear thy voice. For sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely." You know, as you look through the Song of Solomon, you know, he uses words that are kind of outdated for us and kind of weird things. You know, if I start calling her, you know, my dove, and my, you know, in your neck is like a tower, and your teeth are like, you know, ivories or whatever. I mean, she'd think I was either nuts or else, and sometimes it wouldn't be so, you know, some of the things that they highlighted, you know, weren't necessarily things that people like are being highlighted today. You got a round belly and, you know, whatever, all these things. But, you know, but the idea was that he was sharing his love and they were sharing love with each other and verbally in their communication. Something very important for us to build up and work on. Okay, anything else before we move into the next one? Okay, number four. Encouragement and praise. Encouragement and praise. You know, we need to think of something regularly to praise and encourage our spouse with every day. I mean, one person said that, you know, for every criticism, there ought to be 10 compliments. And that's something we need to focus on, because it's a whole lot easier to find things that we don't particularly like, and we just kind of overlook the things that we do like. And so we do need to work at praising and being a blessing and an encouragement there. And then he gives several little clips here from Paul in various places. He says that we're to exhort one another daily, we're to edify. Favor is deceitful, beauty is vain, but the woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. So then he points out the Lord's well done. You know, even the very fact that the Lord will compliment those who have done a good job is a good example and a good illustration that reminds us that we ought to be doing that as well. And it's something that I think we all need to work on. I know I need to work on that. You know, sometimes I feel appreciative, but I don't even say what I feel. And so sometimes we need to express what we feel, not just feel it, because that's an important thing. And, you know, you stop and think of different times that you have been appreciated or complimented or encouraged by somebody. And those are things that we remember, you know, that were really a blessing to us, that, you know, so-and-so said this about me, and that was a blessing. Well, that's what we need to be doing with others, whether it be our spouse or somebody else, and sharing with them the things that are an encouragement and a blessing to us. Okay. And then mentions there in Ecclesiastes that the words of the wise men's mouth are gracious. Gracious. Why now, with the review, like I said, as I went through these questions, you know, when I wrote the questions, I should have wrote them a little bit differently than I did. But I wrote them basically for your benefit. And they're really not the kind of questions that we share with each other. You know, what are signs that I'm lacking intimacy with my walk with God? Well, that's something between me and God. It's not really something we want to broadcast. But I want you to go through these in your own time with your spouse or whatever and work on some of these things and look at these things, because the questions are important and they're helpful to get you to think about things in your own relationship that need to be cultivated and built up. You know, even like the question number four there, when's the last time that you sincerely praised your spouse? You know, and it makes you stop and think. You know, well, when is the last time that I really openly did that instead of just, you know, thanks for dinner, it was nice, or, you know, whatever. But even little things like that are good, but to have a more in-depth appreciation. And then even naming ways that your spouse could encourage you, and then turn it around and what are things that your spouse could do that would encourage you. And those are things we need to think about. And a good thing to communicate about, a good thing to sit, you know, each of you talk about it for your 15 minutes. But seriously, it can be of help to us. One last thing I want to share with you that is not in your notes here. One author gave some things that I thought were worthy of thoughts, okay? He was talking about the most important words that we can say. And he's got six, and then five, and then four, and then three, and then two, and then one. Okay, so I'm going to give them to you. The six words. I am sorry, I was wrong. I am sorry, I was wrong. Six important words that we say. The five most important words, the author says, you are my best friend. You are my best friend. All right, the four most important words, what is your opinion? What is your opinion? That's good. And then the three most important words, the author had some different ones that didn't make sense to me, so I put in three that I felt was better. Please forgive me. That's an important one. And then the two most important words is thank you. And then any guess as to what the one most important word might be? Garrett? That's more than one word. One word. One word.
Thank you.
No? That is a good one, but, well, that's, yeah, this kind of two. Any other ideas? They had the word we. We. And I thought, you know, that's pretty good. You know, that when we talk about things, we need to do this, or we are part of this. And the idea here is that our relationship is not about me, it's about us. Yeah, it's us. Okay? So those are some things for you to chew on and think about. Let me read through the list again. I'm sorry I was wrong. You are my best friend. What is your opinion? Please forgive me. Thank you. And we.